Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12 p.m. and that is June 17th, and I'm recording a little earlier than usual because I was out at the DMV this morning. You have to kind of go there physically at the moment because the only appointments online are out in October and my driver's license will have expired before then, and they gave me an appointment for about an hour and a half from now, so I'll be out of the office for probably the rest of the afternoon. But there are a couple of things that I think are particularly relevant. The first is that bond prices have rebounded here. So we had the downward dynamic yesterday. The move in yields is actually larger, and it completely countermanded the upward dynamic that we had on the yield yesterday. A good part of the reason why there is demand for bonds is less about the anticipation that interest rates are going to jump higher in 2023, or perhaps, you know, that people like Evercore, for example, anticipate that they'll start raising rates next year and that there'll be four interest rate hikes by 2023. So that's ambitious, but it's also pricing in a very strong economic recovery. And I think it's perhaps more important that the dollar has continued to rebound. So we do have upside follow-through in here today. And the dollar index is continuing to steady here in the region of the lower side of this range. It's now back above the trend mean, and it looks like it has some legs here. These are dynamic moves we've seen. So now the question is, will it break the sequence of lower rally highs? Certainly, we can see that this is a big dynamic, and the last one was back in March, and we did get a bit of follow-through on the upside, and then it failed. So the next question is, why are we seeing this move in the dollar? Well, there was the anticipation that the USA was going to print themselves into oblivion, and that the dollar would take the hit. You had Janet Yellen testifying today and saying that deficits and debt do matter. So that was also bullish for the dollar. You, on the other side of that trade, you had the Europeans saying that they're not in a hurry to raise interest rates. And that, of course, was also beneficial for the dollar and negative for the euro. And since the euro is the big currency inside the dollar index, then it's back below its trend mean in a dynamic manner and encountering resistance at the upper side of this range. When we then go and look at what's happening in Asian currencies, well, the renminbi was also a bit weaker in here today, and we've had some downside follow through, so continued resistance here around the 110 area. And the big question now is, where exactly are we in terms of this cycle? And I think it's an awfully big question, because 2020 was an incredibly artificial situation. There's never been an occasion where the entire global economy shut down voluntarily, and with millions of people sitting at home doing nothing, and governments printing money with abandon, and massive social programs being introduced out of thin air, and the real prospect that we are on the thin end of the wedge for universal basic income. These are all, I think, important points. But I think the big question is, has the yield curve spread peaked? And I think it's an awfully big question, because there's an incredible cyclicality to this trend overall. And when we think about the 10-year minus the 3-month, that's generally been the spread that has had the most predictive power, and it tends to be way early. So it became inverted back in the beginning of 2019, and it got down to negative 50 basis points. So it's up now 200 basis points off that low, and not so recently it was at 225 basis points, but it is starting to come back down. And if it were to fall back below the trend mean, well, then we'd have to be asking some important questions. Generally speaking, it's not so much the inversion of the yield curve that turns into a problem. That's the lead indicator for a future recession. It's when it starts to push on the upside that the markets begin to take flight. And it's usually as we start to trend higher from these levels. And you can think about the fact that the crash in 2008 occurred when the yield curve spread had almost got all the way back up towards the upper side of the range. We had the crash in the late part of 2000, and then the big declines happened in 2001 and 2002, and particularly after 9/11. Again, in the upper half of this range. So we're now at this interesting juncture where about half of the decline has been unwound, and usually stock markets run into trouble in the upper half of this chart. So now the question is, well, government bond yields, 10-year yields, are still trending downwards. So this was a pretty dynamic move in here today, and we still have the sequence of lower rally highs. When we then just go down, and the ladder of maturities, the 5-year, had a pretty substantial move yesterday and didn't really start to rally in here today. So that looks more like a dynamic move, and it suggests that the 5-year, which is also representative of where investors think of where the duration of government debt is, it's usually the 5-year that they think of as that benchmark. And of course, we had the breakout on the 2-year yesterday. And this, of course, is a rather large move overall. And the moving average is kind of compressing it. But we can also think about the fact that this has been incredibly inert. So the move on the 10-year is certainly larger, and it's exaggerating the compression in the yield curve spread. But if bond yields continue to contract, and investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the contention that inflationary pressures are in fact transient, then that does hold out the prospect that the threat from rising yields will be contained, that the Federal Reserve will be slow to raise interest rates, and that growth might in fact start to perform once again. And I think that is the clear conclusion that we can draw from the strength today of the Nasdaq and the underperformance of the Dow Jones. So what this is beginning to look like is this trend of value outperforming growth is being challenged right now because of this change in government bond yields. So rising government bond yields are better for value, falling government bond yields are better for growth. And then we can think about I do wonder, and I guess we can simply just rely on the chart patterns because we do have a bull market overall. And we have short-term overbought conditions. There's no question of that. But the one thing that was certainly true of 2020 is that we had a recalibration of debt and credit metrics, and there was an awful lot of stretching out of maturities. So we don't have the maturity wall. We don't have the pressure in the credit markets. We have some of the loosest financial conditions ever. And we have central banks that are talking about raising interest rates and somewhat worried about inflation, but still not really in any mood to intervene. And why would they when the primary stock markets are still in the region of their all-time peaks? So there is the potential that we're going to get some pause of consolidation and that the S&P might unwind this somewhat overextension relative to the trend mean. It's about 10% overextended relative to the 200-day moving average at present. It wouldn't be beyond the bounds of possibility if we get some form of pullback, but as long as it's holding the region of the trend mean, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the medium-term uptrend. I think that there was a bit of an overreaction to the Fed statement, and that some of the things that are registering inflationary pressures are moderating. Commodity prices are softening somewhat. We had a fairly substantial downward dynamic on copper yesterday, and it was down again in here today. So this is now clearly inconsistent for what had been a very consistent trend. It is much less consistent now, pulling back into the range. We can think about staircase step sequence uptrends and midpoint danger lines, and the lower side of this range was about 335, 385 up to 4, let's call it 435, so 60 points. And that would say that, generally speaking, if we take 30 points off of that, we're going to be down somewhere around the 408 or 9 level, or even 410. If the price comes back below that level, it will have triggered a midpoint danger line stop. And then we have clear inconsistencies. So this trend is becoming progressively less consistent, and it suggests that we're going to have at least some pause in consolidation. And we're right in the region of the all-time peaks, and this is a significant downward dynamic. So it would suggest that this clear trend of outperformance for commodities is going to take a breather because China is going to do whatever they can to try and bring down commodity price inflation because they are worried about the prices at the factory gate rising. So they are likely to be successful in the short term, but China's not a producer of these commodities. So they don't have a lot of control over supply. And their stockpiles might be substantial, but they're also finite. So they can release supply from their stockpiles, and that will bring down prices, but it will not bring them down indefinitely. And if we are in a recovery scenario overall, and every country in the world is running accommodative monetary and fiscal policy, well, then it is the recipe for a new bull market. And the available supply will get mopped up, but perhaps we'll have a correction first, and that will supply us with the next attractive buying opportunity. So then we can look at the copper miners. And they're pulling back in line with the copper price. So now coming back into the region of the higher reaction lows and the trend mean, it's been an incredibly impressive rebound over the course of this year. And now it's going to take some time to recover and to reassert the demand dominance overall. And then we're seeing a similar pullback in gold. And gold was down $40 today, and this is another big downward dynamic from the $1,900 area. It hasn't been pulling back on a single day on this occasion, but we've had two big moves down over the last 2 days. So now the question is, on each of the occasions that it's pulled back like this from around the $1,900 area, it has made a new low. And we're now not all that far off the $1,700 level. So if gold is going to find support, it's going to do so, or I think that that's the wrong way to say it. If the recovery scenario is in fact correct and gold has bottomed, then it's going to find support above $1,700. If, on the other hand, we're still in a broader corrective phase and the lows have not yet been found, then it will break below $1,700 and come down to $1,600. Of course, we've had a bigger rally on this occasion, and it has been rallying for longer than the last two rallies. I do anticipate that the low is in for gold. And I'm looking for the first evidence of support coming through so that I can buy some more. But we don't have a lot of evidence for it just yet. And this is also starting to put pressure on the gold miners. They were down in a dynamic manner in here today. This is also pushing down through the trend mean, and it has broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. Off the low that was put in back in early March. The upper side of the base formation is around 30, and if we come back into that level, I think it will also offer another attractive buying opportunity for the gold sector. As we then think about what's going on around the rest of the world, well, if the dollar is rallying, then and Asian currencies are weakening, then that does represent something of a challenge for emerging markets to encourage foreign investment. But in nominal terms, it's beneficial for stock markets. So the Nifty was down today, but off its lows. When we think about the Indonesian market, it's been benefiting recently and has rebounded from the trend mean, but it's going to have to hold that region in here right now. So we're certainly getting at least some evidence of another rotation, and it seems like these rotations are coming through on almost a quarterly basis. So we are now in the third quarter of the year, well, approaching the end of the second quarter, and people beginning to position for the third quarter of the year, and perhaps favoring growth over value. And that will, I think, continue as long as bond yields continue to compress. When we think about the Chinese market, the H share index has been going sideways for a decade, and it was in mildly positive territory today, but there's not a lot of evidence to suggest that we're going to get a significant rebound in here. But then we can think about the semiconductor sector. When we think about China's semiconductors, well, they're behind the rest of the world right now, and they're investing $1 trillion to catch up. And semiconductors in China today are where the e-commerce and social media companies were a decade ago. We can think about, for example, there was a big push to create a demand driver in terms of the consumer economy in China after the financial crisis. They very quickly realized how exposed they were to international demand for exports and wanted to create a counterbalance in terms of a vibrant domestic demand story for consumerism. There was a significant investment in and fostering of technology companies, and Alibaba and Tencent thrived, and they were allowed to try anything and everything in order to achieve their goals. They were able to completely circumvent banking rules, for example, and they were able to offer daily interest rates at deposit rates that were well in excess of what was available at banks. So they were able to accumulate massive reserves for their financial systems, and then they were able to launch online products and online banking and payments products, and that allowed the tech sector to flourish. And it fulfilled its function and became so large that it posed a threat to the authority of the government. So now they're being weighed on. So Alibaba is still weak, and the government in China has decided that these companies are about as big as they want them to be, and there's a push to try and make them smaller. And the fact that Didi, which is the Chinese version of Uber, and is ubiquitous in China, has now got antitrust investigations ahead of its initial public offering. Well, that's another example of how China is attempting to act against these companies because of their size and influence. But semiconductors is a national priority. It's where these companies were about a decade ago. And they're plowing money into the sector. So, by hook or by crook, they're going to get a semiconductor manufacturing sector, and probably a lot sooner than people anticipate. The story of how HSMC went bankrupt almost immediately after it was able to acquire one of ASML's most advanced machines. Well, a lot is being made of that story in terms of the fraud and the graft and the ability to fool regional governments. Nobody's talking about where that machine ended up. So there's the clear potential that it's being reverse engineered. And this has been a growing threat for a long time. So ASML continues to push on the upside, and it has been one of the most successful companies in Europe and indeed the world. And it's up 10 times in the last decade at least. So they have a dominant position in the provision of these extraordinarily complex machines for producing extremely small and sub 10 nanometer chips. And they continue to thrive because there's demand for these machines, and there is more demand than they can keep up with. And these machines are extremely expensive. And it's increasingly likely that China is going to try and reverse engineer it, because why wouldn't they? And that would also suggest that there is the clear scope that they're going to have very successful chip companies in the next few years, because they're state-sponsored. There's massive amounts of money flowing into them, and that it's a national priority in just the same way that solar panels were a national priority, then social media companies were a national priority, then e-commerce companies were a national priority. They succeeded in all of those, and there's no reason to anticipate that they won't succeed in developing their own domestic chip companies as well. So when we think about, well, what's the next thing that China is going to concentrate on? Well, they're not being any, there's no secret about it. They're clearly supporting their chip sector. And that would suggest that some of these titans of industry in the West are probably going to have a more difficult time of it in the next few years. So even though there is this pivot back into growth, and these companies are still doing well and continuing to push on the upside, they do need to be monitored, because the cure for high prices is high prices. And the success of companies, it doesn't matter what the sector is, encourages competition. And that's exactly what we're seeing now. So it might take a couple of years, but that competition will arrive. And that also plays into this question about the yield curve spread. If it has in fact peaked, is it something similar to the big surprise and difficult environment of the mid to late 1990s, where we had the Russian debt default, the Asian financial crisis, and the failure of long-term capital management, and then the peso crisis as well? That resulted in interest rates staying down, liquidity staying abundant for another few years, which allowed valuations to reach not just high levels, but extraordinarily high levels. And then subsequently, those valuations were compressed as interest rates rose. So that is, I think, a potential scenario, and it's relevant because we still have reasonably consistent trends, despite the fact that we have short-term risk of consolidation. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.